It is with gratitude and pride that I present to you the Honorable Bert B. Hickenlooper, Governor of Iowa, speaking on the subject of radio, our newest freedom. Governor Hickenlooper.
Thank you, Mrs. Lewis. President Ryan, ladies and gentlemen, I was very pleased indeed just a moment ago to have Mrs. Lewis so glibly recite the name of Hickenlooper. I assure you that I approach the introduction sometimes with fear and trembling, and especially where a strange introducer is undertaking to struggle with that name. I've told this story a good many times. Two or three of my friends asked if I wouldn't pass it on to you. Perhaps you've heard it. If so, forgive me. But down in southwestern Iowa, where I was born, we used to wear asafoetida around our neck when we were kids going to grade school to ward off colds. And I think it was very successful indeed. At least those of us that survived the treatment thought it was successful. Some years ago, after I had to move to a new town where I was practicing law, I got a very severe cold, and the known and recommended remedies of all well-meaning friends, having been used in vain, I thought of the old asafoetida remedy. So I stopped in a drugstore one night and asked the druggist for a dime's worth, and he tossed it out to me, and strange as it might seem, I didn't have any money. So I asked him to charge it to me. He got out his pencil and his book and asked what my name was, and I told him Hickenlooper, and he said, "Take it for nothing, I wouldn't write asafoetida in Hickenlooper for 10 cents. And then I appear here today in a somewhat peculiar role, attempting to address you, ladies and gentlemen, who are engaged in a very technical field of activities without being technically informed. I enjoyed the address of Chairman Fly today, although I told him afterwards that there were certain initials that he used that were as mystifying to me in his talk as certain other initials that are bandied around over the country and have been for a good many years are mystifying to me. But nevertheless, I enjoyed it very thoroughly. I got a picture of great possibilities of radio tomorrow, and I want to thank you for asking me here and for the opportunity to benefit by at least a partial vision of the technical developments and possibilities of your field. In speaking to you of radio without any technical knowledge, I shan't attempt to give you technical advice. But being a member of the public and a citizen who fights with his children as to which program we'll get over the radio, especially along about 5 o'clock in the evening, and who attempts to use it as much as possible, I perhaps have some ideas of my own, and they're strictly my own, on radio. And as a non-technical member of the public, a user, if you please, I still feel that I'm like the fellow that said that he never laid an egg, but he could tell a good one from a bad one. And it's from that standpoint, as a layman, that I venture to toss in a few suggestions here today, which represent some of at least of my groping ideas toward this great new field of communication and public activity. Whenever the word radio is mentioned, strange emotions are stirred in the average mind. To most of the younger generation, born to its convenience and availability, it is a common fact and just one of the things we have. Entertainment and news from a little box are perfectly natural and accepted to them as such. But to many of us who remember the days when the aeroplane was a big impractical kite, the automobile a glorified bicycle that would never take the place of horses, and anyone who dared mention sending sound through the air beyond the limits of normal hearing without wires was considered ready for a padded cell. The beginnings and development of radio is a wonder indeed. To most of us, scientific terms explaining its why and wherefore mean very little. We've come from the days when there was no such animal. We watched it grow. We now depend and rely upon it. In an age of scientific marvels, the field of radio and the discovery of some of the principles that make it work may be the outstanding field of scientific accomplishment up to this time. But as this development has, but great as this development has been, we have every reason to believe that the discoveries of tomorrow will be limitless indeed. The speed with which the radio principle has been adapted to all manner of utility in addition to communication is amazing, and only sharpens the search for undreamed of future possibilities. In the field of communication, however, radio has had its greatest public acceptance. It has drawn the nation closer together. It has brought countries within speaking distance of each other. Through it, the hermit in the hills is as close to the world events as the resident of world capitals, and sometimes better informed. It has been and is a medium of education and spiritual uplift. And there have been seasons, now permanently banned, I hope, when programs glorifying Two-Gun Pete, the glamorous hero, glamorous thug, have undoubtedly put Robin Hood ideas into the impressionable minds, young and old. Radio, properly used, has been the means of preserving and revitalizing freedom. And on the other hand, when controlled by propagandists, has been a powerful means of poisoning men's minds, of distorting natural judgment, and of destroying liberty. Printing has been the age-old vehicle of progressive civilization. It will continue to be a bulwark of progress and the preserver of the record. But it has now been joined by a great medium of limitless possibilities, and to which the future holds forth high adventure indeed. The very nature of radio and its utility make it an instrument of public service. Its capabilities and the public interest create tremendous responsibilities upon those who operate it, and its public benefit will be measured in proportion as the public, represented by government on the one hand, and the industry on the other, recognize, protect, and respect the proper fields of each. The public has recognized the necessity for proper regulation of the activities of radio. Such regulation is manifestly a necessary and proper function of government. And when regulation is confined to the field of the general public good and based upon principles of encouragement to the development of radio, then it is good. It must be borne in mind, however, that the radio business, while it has certain attributes of public utility, nevertheless is and must remain primarily in the hands of individual free enterprise rather than to be permitted to slip into the complete dominion and control of government. Regulation of any business in the public good is constructive. But there is a growing tendency in many lines of activity where public regulation is proper to substitute for it public dominion and control. And this public dominion and control can be, and in many instances has been used in various fields of governmental activity to oppress and unreasonably hamper initiative, enterprise, and progress. In radio, because it is a powerful medium of expression and a great molder of public opinion, arbitrary and capricious control by political agencies can turn it into a vast propaganda machine in spite of the determination of the industry to keep it free and impartial. Regulation should be based upon broad, equitable principles.
You're the biggest wolf I ever saw.
Oh, you're just trying to be nice to me.
Look, Sterling, look. It's very simple. Just walk up to Helen and say, "Miss Forrest, may I have the honor of your company on a date tonight? And remember, be masterful."
Try it. Oh, Miss Forrest.
Yes?
Miss Forrest, may I have the honor of your company on a date tonight? And remember, be masterful.
Why, I'd love to go out with you, Sterling.
You would?
Yes, I would.
Gosh, you know, when I walked in here tonight, I didn't have anything but a little bitty old baby teeth. And now I've got fangs.
Well, Sterling, you got your date. Now, don't forget we made a deal. You're supposed to go out and sell my songs now.
Oh, sure. Say, all I have to do is sing your songs to the publisher and it's all over.
Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of. Now, before I trust you with a brand new song of mine, here's an oldie that even a child with no ear for music could sell. I'll see if you can sell it.
Oh, fortunately, I haven't got an ear for music either. But I do have an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and a head for figures and... Oh, that Helen Forrest. I'm not much to look at, practically nothing to see. I'm glad I'm living and lucky to be. I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. I can't save a dollar, I ain't got 1 cent, but she wouldn't holler, she'd live in a tent, because I've got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. Though she loves to work and slave for me every day, she'd be so much better off if I went away. But why should I leave her? Why should I go? She'd be unhappy without me, I know. If I'm not boasting, I got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way. I guess the dame's nuts.
In a few minutes, we hope to reach out across the blazing Pacific and bring home by shortwave a man who once ran a chain store in upstate New York. And more than anything else in all the world, this family man would like to be home. But the cards of war are stacked, and he's pretty far down in the deck. And as you sit by the radio, other men are on westbound troop trains going out to fight beside this one-time store manager. They're tough and they're hard, but train-weary and hungry, too. And the food in the mess car is almost exhausted. You see, the train's been delayed and pulled onto a siding. And look at all the women bustling about. Who are they? That band on their arms. Of course, they're Red Cross canteen workers loaded with hot coffee and sandwiches and smiles and a lot of little touches that get magnified into something really big. In salute to these women who wear the small Red Cross and serve the men who bear the cross of war, and for a wife named Dorothy and her children in Moira, New York, yeah, you guessed it, the wife and children of the chain store manager, this song.